Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with J.J. Cooper, I am John Manuel. I want to remind everybody that baseballamerica.com has plenty of books available for you in the holiday season. We've just put our almanac to bed. So that's that one won't be ready, I wouldn't say necessarily by Christmas, but one book that is ready for the holiday season is our 2014 Great Parks calendar. And, yeah, it's not necessarily a book, J.J., but it is book-like. I'm going to give you a little tease. Cashman Field is in this year's... Cashman Field is Mr. August. I don't know if I should say Ms. August for the Great Parks calendar.
Ballparks are he or she?
I think cars are a she, but ballparks
are... a she.
Ballparks are not she. The baseball grounds of Jacksonville also made it into this year's calendar. Who are the other 10? You have to buy the Great Parks calendar to find out. But it's $14.95, a great holiday gift, and it's available either by calling 800-845-2726 or by ordering online at baseballamerica.com. JJ, we have a lot to talk about in today's podcast. Now, you and Matt Eddy are going to do the National League Central podcast draft style like you did the National League East podcast. But we're here to talk to wrap up the Arizona Fall League season, to talk 40-man roster and Rule 5.
Rule 5
slash dengue fever. Rule 5 syndrome. You've progressed past fever to syndrome. And then, but I think we should start with the blockbuster trade. Because we just don't get too many of these. And the Tigers and the Rangers, you could almost call it a challenge trade. I think it was really more a case of...
It's a contract trade.
It's a contract trade, but it was contract for contract, and it was a fit trade. The way these two teams are trying to make their players fit. What was your first impression when you saw the trade besides, oh my God, I got to call John?
But I tweeted, I think, like, it just does stand out to me that these insanely long first base contracts that we've seen a lot of recently.
Yeah.
We've seen a good number of them. Well, what we've seen with that is really it comes down to at about year, even in year three, there starts to be some of this buyer's remorse.
You're like the old Japanese guy in Inception, you know, filled with regret.
Right. Well, you're looking at these deals where I think the other way you put it is that the Tigers looked at this now, and this was true when they signed Prince Fielder, but they went, oh, how are we going to work this out? We've got Prince Fielder, Miguel Cabrera,
and Victor Martinez.
That's not going to work out long term, and not only that, but we can't walk all of our money into first base when we really want to re-sign Max Scherzer.
I think at the time they weren't sure if Max Scherzer was going to be that re-sign guy. I also think they thought in the short term it would be worth it if they won a World Series. And let's face it, they went into this year as the favorite, and I feel like they would have won the World Series. I think they would have beaten the Cardinals if they could have pulled that off against the Red Sox. And they were the better team than the Red Sox, but they didn't get the big hit and couldn't get the big out, and obviously lost that series. But I mean, they were on the cusp of accomplishing their goal, in which case I think they also would have had maybe the financial push in their own minds to have kept that going for one more year. But I think the confluence of everything, of Prince Fielder's comments at the end of that series, of the way Miguel Cabrera's body wore down at the end of the regular season and that he wasn't 100%, Prince Fielder not playing well in the postseason, all those things made them think, okay, we got to move Prince Fielder. I'm just surprised that it was for Ian Kinsler. I mean, I guess I thought if it would have been for anybody there, it would have been for the younger guy, Profar, and take on some other bad contract.
Yeah, but I think what it comes down to is that I don't think the Texas... Maybe Texas wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
What it comes down to is Prince Fielder doesn't have much value on the trade market. As crazy that is to say, but this deal establishes that. Because Ian Kinsler is a contract that... It's not as nightmarish looking, but
it's 4 years versus seven is the big difference. But in what the teams are going to spend on these two players over the next 4 years, it's pretty comparable. They're pretty even.
Right, and then the Tigers had to kick in money,
right,
to make this work. That's one thing I think a lot of fans are still having to kind of process. I know, you know, I do the Reds Top 30 now, and Brandon Phillips, there's rumors he's on the trade market, and fans keep asking, so can we get a number two starter for Brandon Phillips? No, if you trade Brandon Phillips, you're getting out from under the money that you have left. If you do that, you could really look at that in many ways as you did well.
Yeah, you're basically trading him to get out from under his deal, and the flexibility that you get is better than any players are prospects even you might get back.
And Prince Fielder, at this point, it's not that he's in the decline of his career or anything like that, but he was not as productive this past year.
It does kind of, to me, it goes back to the whole, just the issues of first base offense in the major leagues. None of the first basemen, other than Paul Goldschmidt, are hitting like old school first basemen. Very few are. I mean, Prince Fielder kind of did. But
the first I love the note that made, I saw the note that's like, and I'm mentioning this because Daniel Noble is in the note, but it's like players who had a higher OPS than Prince Fielder in 2013. And Daniel Noble was one of them. I mean,
that's amazing. I mean, Prince Fielder, I think, does have value because he plays every day. He does. I think there is something to the fact that you had to treat Cabrera somewhat honestly because Prince Fielder was there. I'm fascinated to see what the Tigers can do now next. How do you think? To me, the people from the Baseball America perspective, this impacts the Tigers more than it impacts the Rangers, because it impacts Nick Castellanos and then the fact that the Tigers have three middle infielders among their top 10 prospects, other than Castellanos. Obviously, not a middle infielder. Castellanos could play left field, could move back to third base. I think more likely that he will move back to third base. Mm-hmm. And then it affects the fact that they have Suarez, whose name I'm blanking on. Is it Eugenio Suarez? Just added to their 40-man roster. Was in their top 10 last year. Pretty nice-looking prospect. Not a superstar by any stretch, but I think there's a chance that he could be an everyday guy. And he could be an everyday guy at third base. That might be his best position. He might be... I don't think he has the bat for third, but defensive, that's where he profiles better, JJ.
Right, but if he's getting everyday at-bats, if he's getting regular at-bats at third base, that's
not
frightening.
But not in the major leagues. He didn't have a bad year last year. I think you're selling him short a little bit. I kind of like Eugenio Suarez.
You may like him a little bit more than I do then. If he's not playing in the middle...
Well, it sounds like he's a step slow for short, speed.
But if he's not playing in the... You know, if he's, I just don't think that he has a nearly enough power or the above average hit tool. Like, you trade that off. You say, okay, the guy's going to hit, you know, 300 opposed to 360, 370 on base. You take that and you don't get the power. I don't think he gives you either of those.
I see a guy who's had 60 walks this past year, 21 years old in AA, and had 45 to 50 extra base hits. That's a pretty good mix. I like Eugenio Suarez. I think you're selling him short. I'm not sure he's good. I mean, I like him. I think he's you'd like that much better in the middle. But this is not a Judy. This guy has some fun. And he had 60 walks this year, 65 the year before, career 363 on base. There's a lot to like, I think, about Eugenio Suarez. I like him. I like him quite a bit, actually. I think he's one of the stealthier prospects out there. I like him better than Hernan Perez. I don't like him better than than Devin Travis, one of my cheese balls. But those are the guys this affects the most, because if they keep Ian Kinsler at second base, then those guys are a little bit frozen. I think it's more likely.
Iglesias is going to be the shortstop for a while now.
Correct.
Even if he hit, the best way to put it is even if he has significant regression next year and ends up being a 220, 230 hitter, he's played it defensively, he's been good enough. And he hit enough this year that they're going to need some patience to see if he can get that back.
Yeah, so to me, those are the guys that are the most affected negatively. But at the same time, it does give the Tigers some options. And if they also have Dixon Machado, who I'm not a big believer in, but as a shortstop, has some defensive chops, even was in the fall league this year. There's four prospects I just mentioned. Machado, Travis, Hernan Perez, and Eugenio Suarez in the middle of the diamond. And that's
an organization that doesn't have a whole lot of
right.
Prospects.
So if you're, and that's an organization also that has Iglesias, who's a young regular, is going to be your shortstop, and now you just traded for Kinsler. So if Kinsler's still their second baseman, if their evaluation is Ian Kinsler's our second baseman for the next at least 2 years, that gives them some trade chips. Mm-hmm. So you're probably never going to have more value than Devin Travis has now. The fact that he just hit 350 over a full season, he didn't have a great fall league. I thought he was kind of gassed. But I think that, as everyone else has already said about this, this is not the last shoe to drop in Detroit. But if they need to make a trade, I think those four middle infield prospects we just mentioned would be – one or two of those guys would be involved in a future trade. I don't think this really, from a prospect standpoint, JJ, affects the Rangers really very much at all.
A couple things. One, okay, this does mean the end probably of – The long-rumored, well, why don't the Cardinals and Rangers get together and just swap Profar for Tavares?
Right.
Now we can make that, well, why don't the Cardinals and Rangers get together and swap Luis Sardinas for, who would be?
Mike O'Neill?
No. I love Mike O'Neill, but no.
I know you love Mike O'Neill, but nobody loves him that much.
No, not that much. Luis Sardinas for, Kevin Seagrass did enough.
Steven Piscani?
I don't think that fits. I think you'd want, if you're trying with the Cardinals, you're asking for arms if you're not getting.
Certainly. I thought you were still looking for an outfield. Yeah. You know, the Rangers don't have a ton of outfielders, but their infield looks mighty good, JJ, with Fielder,
well,
Profar, Andrews, Beltre, if that's what they're going to go with.
And the other thing is that the Rangers still have a surplus in the middle infield. And I'm not talking
They do.
I'm not even talking about guys who are like an A-ball or something.
Yeah, Sardinas and Odor.
Odor is. Name me two better second base prospects. And second base, admittedly, a lot of second base prospects are playing shortstop. But two better second base prospects.
He's probably the best guy.
He's probably
the best guy. Combination of savvy, offensive ability, solid athleticism, and polish.
The best way I can put it is compare him to Colton Wong, who's the Cardinals' second base.
I'd take Odor.
It's not even close. I mean, like, I just think he's much more physical than. I think Wong, and maybe you may even have a little bit safer bet because he has actually played in the big leagues and all that.
I like Wong. I mean, he's just a different profile
because
speed is more a part of it. Whereas Rougned Odor to me is just kind of like a, I don't know where he profiles in the batting order, but that guy's going to hit. You know,
oh yeah,
seems like it's going to be like a kind of a Placido Polanco kind of career with maybe a little bit more power.
But the thing you like this for the Rangers, I think, not on the prospects, but just overall, and this may cost them down the road because now they have the last 7 years.
And it's a backloaded contract, by the way.
Right.
I mean,
they're getting some money back,
right,
which will help that a little bit. But if you said, where have the Rangers been really lacking for years now? It's always felt like first base. I know McClellan's always been a little bit better than maybe everyone gives him credit for. At the same time, Mitch Moreland has never been an above average.
No, that's fair. And they're off, you know, I also, you know, Prince Fielder's going from a tough home run park to a park that's very favorable. And he's going to a park that's where the right field is modeled on the old Tiger Stadium. So that should look familiar to him, considering he used to hit balls into the upper deck at the old Tiger Stadium when he was 12. So this should be good for Prince. Prince always makes me feel old. I interviewed Prince when he was 14, I guess, when we did our first baseball for the ages. I think he was 14.
And
have you ever seen the picture of that?
Yeah.
I mean, he makes Dan Vogelbach look skinny in that picture, so... Dan Vogelbach, fat joke of the day. I do at least one every day, it seems like. So.
Sorry, Dan.
Yeah, it really isn't nice. But anyhow, but it was a fascinating trade. Even the contracts are certainly the motivator. I was impressed by the fact that baseball kind of won the day that day. Of course, part of it was A-Rod.
Baseball already won the day because it was the 40-man roster deadline day.
And that's the other segue, JJ. It was really really not nice and just classic A-Rod to steal the attention of 40-man roster decision day. I would say one of the more poignant parts of 40-man roster decision day was the Twitter feed of players I knew who did not get protected. They didn't tweet about it, but I DM'd with a couple of them. And, yeah, they knew what a big day it was. And the ones who weren't protected, that's always a bitter day for those guys. It's always a difficult day because it's a day when the organization officially tells you, I don't think you're valuable. I don't think you're worth much to me.
That's mostly true. There's also the sometimes reaction the other way, which is freedom.
Right, exactly.
There's a certain amount of, depending on the player, depending on the situation he is in, there is sometimes that hope, hey, this is going to give me a chance to get picked in the Rule 5, which sounds great to me.
Yeah, I think some of these guys know they're not going to get picked. So, I also love it when a team trades a guy who needs to be 40-man protected for a non-40-man protected. The Dean Anna trade fascinated me just for that and that alone. Because, really, why are the Yankees picking up Dean Anna? They had kind of a 40-man roster crunch themselves, JJ.
They had a bigger crunch than... I would say that the two teams who had the biggest crunch were the Yankees, who... Before, when we were doing our preview, our 40-man roster preview, it was clear the Yankees were going to have to leave guys unprotected who aren't not necessarily slam dunks to be picked.
Useful players.
But useful players who have a decent likelihood of being picked. You have that, and then you have the Cubs, who were a little closer to the 40 already.
Yep.
So they only protected two guys, and that left a couple of guys who, again, the thing with this is I love the Rule 5 draft too much, but it is worth remembering for everyone to kind of thinking about this. Last year, I think when it was all said and done, you could say five guys stuck. So leaving a guy off the 40 man, even if he gets picked in the Rule 5, doesn't necessarily mean that you've lost that guy from your organization
right.
forever. There were five guys really after you got past like pick four.
And only one position player who stuck. And that was a first baseman in Nate Freiman.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unusual, JJ, because usually the guys who stick are like, I think of the guy that the Phillies had, the Mike Martinez guy,
mm-hmm.
who they kept and then they held on to him for a couple of years. And he was like a 25th man. Or I always think of, this is a long time ago, but there was a one year where the Cardinals had Miguel Mejia, an outfielder who they drafted from high class A, and they carried him all year as a pinch runner. He never went and he never turned in anything, but he was a pinch runner defensive replacement. That's the old template. It seems like now Nate Freiman sticking was a sign of the lack of power in the game and what teams will do to get power, and also a sign of Oakland being open to platoons. So they had a basically a platoon at first base. So Nate Freiman was drafted to be a cheap platoon partner for Brandon Moss, and it worked for them.
I do think that one of the things that we're seeing now is I think teams are backing a little bit more away from, it used to be the template very much was the Latin, especially the Latin shortstop, who is eligible for this. We talked about this in SBA a couple weeks ago. Who's eligible for this because
he can't
it is, no, it's made, but because he's made eligible at a time when the U.S. college player is in year one of his pro career.
Right.
If you are a 16-year-old when you sign, you're going to hit being eligible at 21, 22, whereas the U.S. college player, if he's drafted at age 21, is going to be eligible at age 25, 26. That's a big difference.
That is a big difference. I can't believe, by the way, that we have video. We have five guys video in our Rule 5 preview. I did not anticipate that when I opened this file. So, yes, video. But it is. We also, JJ, I would say most years in the Rule 5, there's like a run on one team's players. Last year, I think it was a couple of Indians who got drafted. I remember, of course, famously, it was the one year where the Pirates had a bad farm system, only protected like 35 guys, and then got like four guys picked. One of them, I guess the one who got picked who was the most significant player was Chris Shelton, if memory serves. Mm-hmm. But
that was the year the Tigers went crazy drafting Rule 5.
That's right. They went 43-119, and Chris Shelton and Will Ledesma both were on the 40-man roster all year.
And to Will Ledesma's credit,
he stuck around.
He might
have a pension out of it.
But what I'll say though is that I do think one thing that's happened is that teams are a little less likely to follow that template now of the Class A shortstop who has the defensive chops to actually handle the position as a backup.
Everett Cabrera being the exception.
Right. Exception.
One of the more successful exceptions lately.
The problem to this being that so many of these guys, it's like even if you carry them for that year, by carrying them for that year and giving them 100 at-bats or less, it really retards their development so far that they can never catch up.
Right. No, you're right. It does retard their development.
I do think that's a little less true of the other big template, which is take the Class A or the guy who just made it up to Double A, hard-throwing pitcher who has his control's a little iffy.
Like Reiner Cruz.
Right. Those guys still get picked because there is at least some role that you can find for those guys, especially if you say, okay, look, we're going to get 25 to 40 innings out of them this year. And then, with a guy, especially with a starter moving to the pen, that guy, maybe he actually proves to you he's actually ready to help in some way. Just throw here. We're going to simplify you down to two pitches.
Exactly.
Just air it out, and let's see how it works.
That's why T.J. McFarland, one of the guys who stuck last year, was such an exception to that rule. He was actually a starting pitcher with AAA experience who had a very low ceiling, but I thought a decently high floor, and wound up sticking in Baltimore, which was exactly the situation where I thought was ideally for him because he was a ground ball left-hander with Manny Machado and J.J. Hardy on the left side of the infield, and it wound up working out. He stuck all year in a long relief role.
that's the new template to me.
Yeah.
Is the new template out there, the third template. We talked about this in our preview that's up at baseballamerica.com right now. Is, okay, so you've got the power hitting, a reasonably polished first baseman who's got some limitations. First baseman, corner outfielder, who you can platoon. That's a guy to, you know, that to look for. Then there's the middle infielder or center fielder who's probably not ready to, you know, at the plate, but can run, can play defense, so yep. he can add some value to you as a 25th man.
An Ender Inciarte type.
Right. And then, but the new one that we're also seeing is you know, and we talked about the hard-throwing guy who you
yeah.
put in the pen, and you just see, you know, hey, does he develop in something? But I do think that the new template we're seeing is like guys like McFarland, or we've talked about a couple, Boone Whiting in this year's draft very well, maybe a Cardinals guy, is fits this. The guy who really you draft him in the Rule 5 with the idea, hey, we bring him to camp, and if you're a little thin on pitching, a guy who already has had success at AAA, doesn't have blow-you-away stuff,
right.
but you say, we're going to bring him to camp, and he's going to compete for the fifth starter job
right.
or the long relief job. And the real selling point for this guy, more than anything else, is that if he wins the job and he's even adequate, you're paying a major league minimum, where we see now in the free agent market.
Yeah, finding that kind of guy in the major league free agent is a $2 million minimum just for like a guy who has any big league time. And you're just looking at a Jason Vargas, who is a veteran back of the rotation guy, just got $8 million a year over 4 years. For the Kansas City Royals.
Your investment on...
I'm going to give a little free advice right here. I'm talking to the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. They should look long and hard at Boone Whiting. Here's a major league team that really struggled just having replacement level back of the rotation
starters.
And they
starters. Paid big money for...
Jason Vargas.
For Joe Blanton, who was sub-replacement
exactly,
level.
Exactly. This is a team that does not have a lot of pitching in its own farm system. There's no one standing in this guy's way. And I'm looking at their 40-man roster right now, JJ. It's all back of the bullpen types. Corey Rasmus, Nick Mirande, Michael Cohn, Rob Carson, Josh Wall.
Dane De La Rosa.
They have Matt Shoemaker on their 40-man roster. Boone Whiting is a younger version of Matt Shoemaker. He's a fly ball pitcher. Anaheim, the Big A, whatever they call it now, Angel Stadium. Is a forgiving ballpark for mm-hmm. flyball pitchers. They should give Boone Whiting a long, hard look in the Rule 5. He doesn't have great stuff, but it's 3 average pitches, 9 strikeouts per 9 innings in the minor leagues, pretty good track record. This is the kind of team that they need. Hey, look, if they're going to be a playoff team, it's going to be – if they get to the playoffs, say they have a good year, say Pujols comes back healthy, he's old Pujols or reasonable flexibility. Exactly. It's conceivable as bad as they were. But their pitching needs a significant upgrade. But if they get in the playoffs, it's going to be Jared Weaver and C.J. Wilson who are starting 2 of the games. And I don't know, who's their number 3 starter, J.J.? Garrett Richards maybe? What's his name? Tommy Hansen revitalized?
Okay.
Jerome Williams? I mean, it's a thin pitching staff. You're not drafting Boone Whiting or someone like him in the Rule 5 draft to be a playoff starter. You're drafting him to give you 25... And this is sad. They shouldn't have to go to the Rule 5 draft, but they need a Rule 5 a starting pitcher because they may as well spend $50,000 to try to acquire someone who's better than Joe Blanton was.
And the best way to put it is it's a $25,000 risk.
Yeah.
In baseball terms at this point, it really is kind of something that's laughable that they have never upped that.
That is laughable.
It is. $25,000 for baseball teams when it comes to player acquisition is what you find. Oh, wait, we found this in the cushions. You know, we were going to make a run to the border.
That's barely like an area.
The starting pitcher along the way.
I mean, when you count benefits, that's probably like an area scout's salary and benefits. Maybe a little. I'm talking about benefits. Yeah, the $50,000. Oh, $25,000 is like.
I'm saying because if you offer the guy back, you either get to keep him.
That's like an intern who you're making a job for him in baseball ops.
You know, $25,000. You pay $50,000. But you can either offer him back, and you either get to keep the guy, or you get $25,000 of your $50,000 back.
Yeah, this is a team that they need starting pitching. They gave Billy Buckner a couple of starts last year.
I mean, Joe Blanton's season is the one that
they gave Barry Enright 2 starts. Enright full. I can't believe they gave Barry Enright.
Let me see if I can do a 2-14.
Yeah, that's right. 2-14.
5.26.
But kill the win. No, 6.04.
So it's like I was.
How about 180 hits allowed and 132 and two-thirds innings?
So we'll stop reading stat lines to you. And
But Joe Blanton, he was bad.
Okay. I think Boone Whiting could be as good. I do think there are also, though, there are some intriguing guys. I'm sure we'll come up with a couple more as we in the lead-up for the Rule 5 draft December 12th. That being said, I think we have a number of guys, if you look at our Rule 5 preview right now. Marcus Hatley, Cubs right-hander, who's got above average fastball, maybe you want to say just maybe you want to get it a 55 instead of a 60, but it's at least, it's solid velocity, decent secondary stuff, has had success at, upper levels, is having success this winter in Mexico, where I'm sure that's one of the things that happens with this now is, the Rule 5 rosters get set, and now at this point there's a good number of pro scouts who started, hitting the road to go to the Dominican or Mexico or Puerto Rico because you want to take a look at these guys.
They've been home for a week from the fall league, and they got a week or two at home, and now they're back on the road.
And because the reality is that there aren't that many Rule 5 great finds like there used to be because a couple of years ago they changed the rules and essentially added 1 year of protection for everyone. Well, with that, in the first year of that, before teams really kind of figured it out, it seems like you had Joaquin Soria. You had guys like Joaquin Soria. Joaquin Soria was found for the Rule 5, really in the Mexican, Mexican Pacific League.
Yep.
That's where he went from being, that's a guy worth keeping an eye on to. Okay, no, this is someone you really want to get in the and to me, I don't know if there's, I don't know how long it's going to be before we have another guy at that level, because it is really harder to.
It would have to be a similar story, JJ, someone who's a Latin American pitcher or, that template's a tough one to find.
The greatest success stories in the Rule 5 draft in the last 15, 20 years are almost always
pitchers.
Josh Hamilton is a very rare example in that. Okay, yes. You can have the number one pick in the draft who pretty much was a lost career because of addiction problems, and then he comes back. We'll save that in the back pocket to see if that ever happens again. But Joaquin Soria, Johan Santana, the model is the guy who either has had some injuries and that's why you haven't seen him that much, or he's been he just got up to low A and you're willing to kind of sit and hold on to them and hope it turns into something.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of, viable position players, even in the last 15 years who've been.
Everett Cabrera.
Everett Cabrera is one of the best ones. Scott Posednik was a major league Rule 5 pick. But most of the time, JJ, the success story, Dwayne Wise is a major league Rule 5 pick. But most of these guys have been, the success stories are, for the most part, pitchers. So I do think, like you said, you have winter ball is a great place to find some of these players. On our list, it's a free story at baseballamerica.com. Who's your pick to click? Last year, TJ McFarland was my most likely guy. I was very fortunate that I got that one right. Who's your guy?
I would be surprised if Marcus Hatley's not taken.
Yeah, that means
I can think of some other guys, but if you said who am I most confident on, probably Marcus Hatley. I could come up with a couple more guys who I feel. There are a lot of guys on the list. We list 20.
Yeah.
There aren't going to be 20 guys taken. You cast a wide net to kind of try to, and we don't even know right now. We haven't even, seen a full list of who else. Maybe we missed a guy or two who is eligible, because it is tough when you're going through. It's like, oh, wait, I forgot. That guy was hurt all last year. He was eligible last year's draft. He was hurt too. And now he's pitching. And he's pitching well or something like that.
Of course, the other obvious name I'm forgetting here is Jose Bautista was a Rule 5 draft. Went through four different teams and that in the course of being Rule 5. He's also the rare case of a player where all those roster machinations did not negatively affect his career necessarily, but it may have been a factor in delaying. It took a long time for him to be.
Right. He was Jose Bautista at that point.
We got a couple of Twitter questions. Two of them are related here. One is, see the Braves doing anything? And the related question is, what team does Dayton Moore become scouting director of next year? That's That's a Royals fan who's embittered by the Vargas signing.
The Jason Vargas signing. But at the same time, what the Jason Vargas signing is a reminder of is that when a guy signs a free agent contract at this point, there's so much money in the game that it's almost, and I'm not saying this one's not, 4 years is somewhat egregious to me. You know, it seems like a little long, but we are really at the point where every free agent contract, you hear it and you go, what? And that's been going on for a couple of years now. The Prince Fielder contract, the Albert Pujols contract. There are a lot of contracts where you go, whoa.
Yeah, there are a lot of those, but I mean, that's the 4 years for Jason Vargas is a very legitimate question to ask. The money part is one thing.
The money part is actually, that's almost the price you pay for if you think he's going to be a back-of-the-rotation starter.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the going rate for a starting pitcher. One of these Twitter questions to me is actually one of my – I should have written them up, but I didn't. Derek Harvey at Second HS asks, Brooks Hall seems like a curious choice. Any thoughts on what the Brewers might see in him? I actually do like Brooks Hall. Brooks Hall was a big-time guy out of high school in South Carolina, and he is a late bloomer, a late developer. I will admit that I have a family tie to him. He's a second cousin of my cousin. So he's a second cousin of a second cousin is what he is. So
does that make him a fourth cousin?
Something like that. I mean, I think if I had an unmarried sister, I think they could get married and it would be okay. to use the old world definition of such things. But yeah, Brooks Hall is a guy who long tossed in high school and wasn't allowed to long toss when he first got to the Brewers. So this sounds like a podcast from 2009. But
every podcast we've ever done is still on our iTunes account. If you go back and just pick a random podcast from 2009, I think you probably will get John talking about this.
You will. But Brooks Hall, it's taken him a couple years. First of all, he hardly pitched in high school. He was more of a third baseman and only was a reliever. He didn't become a starter until his high school senior year. I think the combination of different throwing program, different workload, becoming an everyday pitcher, it's taken him a long time to get into a starting pitcher's routine. But he's got good size, he's got arm strength, he's got natural sink. When he finishes his stuff, when he finishes out front, he's got 90-93 mile-an-hour velocity on the fastball. He's got sink in life. I don't think he's a front-of-the-rotation guy, but I like Brooks Hall. So the Brewers don't have a great track record for developing pitchers. They know it. Brooks Hall, to me, he's probably going to be in the back of their top 30. I like Brooks Hall. He's a cheese ball for sure. He's definitely one of my guys I check his box scores. I check his stat line 3 or 4 times a year because he hasn't seemed to come up ever, JJ, in any discussions.
One of the things that happened when doing the Rule 5 you know, the 40-man preview, especially leading up to the 40-man roster deadline.
Now, that was a labor of love.
It was a labor of love. It was fun, but it was a labor. There was a point at midnight where I was going, why am I doing this? I need to get it done tonight. One of the things that stand out is that our listing has less guys as likely protections than got protected. And the reason for that is that there's no – they don't give you any rewards – for stopping at 37
right.
When you can go to 40. Now, there is a downside. If you protect your way to 40 or 39, so you have a spot in Rule 5 pick, and then you down the road you sign a free agent or two, you're going to have to clear guys off, and that guy can then get picked up and not face the same restrictions of Rule 5, you got to carry him on a major league roster, all that.
Right.
So you don't want to go too far. But if you got 32, 33 guys on your 40-man, and you know, okay, we're probably not going to sign more than 2 or 3 guys that we have to add during the offseason. Protect a guy if you be overly cautious on protecting.
And of course, there's no penalty afterwards, as the Blue Jays demonstrated last year. There's no penalty for cycling through and churning your 40-man roster. There's a penalty in terms of karma, I think. Like, I thought that was bad karma to just kind of treat those players who were human beings as non-human beings and cycle through and get guys' hopes up and then dash and then hoped and then dashed and... I don't think that worked very well for the Blue Jays. I don't think it helped their major league team last year. I don't think it hurt them. But I think karmically it wasn't very good for Toronto. I'm with you. The year that Theo Epstein, I've told this story a million times, probably on many podcasts, but the year Theo Epstein first became 40-man roster, first became general manager, one of his first things to do in November of 2002 was set a 40-man roster. And the Red Sox, 28? Back in those days, 28, back in those days, we used a thing called a facsimile machine. And the facsimile came in over the, it kind of got printed out. No, anyway.
Back in the days before Twitter, where really we had to, the great thing about now, it now just comes in.
Like, yeah.
Now, here's the guy that's been set. Back then it was like, we've got to track down what every team
is. Yeah, we had to call every team and ask them to fax us our 40-man roster, their 40-man roster, and we would type them in. And the Red Sox came in at 28, and I said, hey, you know, this guy's a 28-year-old. I believe it was 28-year-old general manager. I bet he uses email. I'll just email him.
This newfangled email thing.
So I emailed and said, Mr. Epstein, congratulations on the new gig. Just wanted to double check. We got your 40-man roster in and only had 28 guys. I want to make sure this is the final 40-man roster. And he instantly emailed back, who needs more than 28? No, I think it just was, who needs 40? So that's a better joke anyway. So who needs 40 was the, so they were at 28. That was a thin organization. Today, if you have prospects, and if you're not going to go on some giant free agent shopping spree, I agree with you, it makes sense to get as close to 40 as you can. And I would protect as opposed to not protect.
Especially because right now, this is the time where teams are most likely also to poach. If you put a guy right now, there's roster room right now.
Right.
If you see a guy come on waivers and you like him, right now it's not a problem. You get to the last week
so
of
spring. When Ryan Jackson gets outrighted by the Cardinals, he gets snapped up.
Right. When you get to the last week of spring training, and everyone's, you know, there's a lot less room at that point. If you're saying, I'm going to carry him, and we may have to outright him the last week of spring training, a lot more chance that he's going to slide right on through and you can put him on your AAA team at that point.
JJ, I glanced over this before. Do you see the Braves doing anything? The real C. Sewell asks, see the Braves doing anything? And this is, again, a team that, after losing Tim Hudson, they have some depth issues. They have depth issues in the infield. They have depth issues with their starting pitching. I count six starting pitchers on their 40-man roster. Brandon Beachy, David Hale, Chris Medlin, Mikey Minor, Julio Teheran, Alex Wood. That's pretty much it. And those are all very young guys. And
they don't have, I mean,
Alex Wood and David Hale have never done a full season of the big leagues as a starter.
Go beyond that, like non-40-man guys. There aren't.
Yeah, in the upper levels. Exactly. So they don't have a lot of insurance. They only have two catchers in the 40-man, one of whom is Christian Betancourt, who's never played above Double A.
They have technically three because one of them showing up.
Yeah, Evan Gattis. I don't know if I'm going to count him as a catcher, but they have some needs, JJ. Do you see the Braves doing anything in the Rule 5? I mean, their pro scouting department, I think we regard fairly highly. They've had some really nice waiver claims, especially.
I was going to say, I'm going to talk about a move they've already made kind of a deep cut, but this is really right up Matt Addy's alley, the minor league free agent, portion of it.
Okay.
Luis Vasquez, who they just added to their 40-man roster, he so fits the profile. We've written about this in SBA as well.
Yeah.
How the Braves do a great job of building a bullpen inexpensively. It's not that they go out there and they sign a big money closer to make it all work. They've got one of those. Craig Kimbrell's really, really, really good.
Right.
But the thing that they've done in addition to that, is they always seem to find that guy who can pitch the seventh. And Luis Vasquez, who doesn't, you know, is an under-the-radar guy, but he's pitched well, and he's got good stuff, and he's pitched well in upper levels. Almost the fact that the Braves picked him and put him on their 40-man leads me to think Luis Vasquez is going to pitch some quality innings for them this year.
It does. That's their recent track record. You kind of give them the benefit of the doubt.
It's almost like I almost put Mark Lowe. Mark Lowe on the Rule 5 list because he was signed recently to a minor league deal by the Rays. Not protected on the 40-man. The fact that, again, talk about another team who knows how to build bullpens.
Yes.
The fact that the Rays signed Mark Lowe to a minor league deal by itself makes me look at it and say, you know, that he probably has a pretty good chance of actually being helpful at some point, useful at some point.
It's like in college basketball recruiting, when a guy commits to Duke, it's almost like you say, well, wait a minute, I thought he was a 3-star guy, but you're going to bump him up to a 4. Kansas, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Couldn't give Duke all the props. But yes, in these recruiting services, almost like they give a guy an extra star depending on what school he committed to.
Well, if you're a reliever in the Braves or the Rays, those are two teams that I'm pretty interested in saying, okay, you probably are going to, they probably know what they're doing on that guy.
Another team, JJ, that's done very well in the Rule 5 draft of late, the last two years under Dan Duquette, is the Baltimore Orioles. They are 2-for-2 in Rule 5 picks. Ryan Flaherty and TJ McFarland both stuck. Neither one of these are great players, but they're good role players. Flaherty hit 10 home runs this year, was one of their better bench players. Is there an obvious guy, I mean, out of these top 20 guys that you mentioned, or could you see a guy who would be a fit for the Orioles? Is there like a, both of those guys were more advanced, guys with triple A time. I mean, Marcus Hatley fits that, but were there other guys with triple A time who you could see, you know, being popped by, say, a team like the Orioles that have been pretty active lately?
I haven't been able to get to kind of the fits. The only fit, you know, that we've kind of gotten to already is, hey, Carlos Perez and the White Sox seem to fit pretty well.
Right.
At least reasonably well. I'm actually not sure if it's a complete fit in the standpoint of they already do have two young catchers who, barring injury, they're probably going to want to carry both of. And really, as a catcher, the reality is if you carried as a catcher and Carlos Perez fits this, you better be a guy who they're comfortable saying you can be the backup catcher now.
Right.
They're not carrying you as a third catcher. I can't give you a name of a third catcher Rule 5.
I can't imagine
that. The best catcher to be taken in the Rule 5 in, I would say, many a year going back is Jesus Flores.
Right.
Who stuck with the Nationals. But that was because the Nationals said, no, we feel comfortable. He may not hit, but we feel comfortable he can be our backup catcher.
Yeah, that's a good example. And of course, that was a kind of a, I mean, he was a top 10 prospect in the Mets system who was lost that way. So, and that's one of the last, yeah, we've had non-40-man roster guys be in top 10s before, guys who weren't protected. And Flores was one. He got popped. Jay Gibbons was one I remember. He got popped. We did it for Steven Souza before the 40-mans were set, and Steven Souza was an easy protect.
He got added to the...
Turned out to be a very easy protection choice and a guy.
No, there are guys like along those lines. Junior Arias is a he's not in the top 10, but he's in the top 15 prospects in the Reds organization, and he's available. A guy who hit 15 homers, stole 60 bases last year, a pretty rare power speed combo. At the same time, there is some logical reason why he's available, which is this is again we come back to the Latin player who doesn't move quickly, he becomes eligible at age 21. In Arias' case, he hasn't played above A-ball. His hit tool is, if you were putting a present grade on his hit tool, it's
right.
Probably a 20.
Right.
You know, it's the bottom of the scale. So you can see where the Reds say, okay, maybe we run the risk on this because really is someone going to be able to carry him all year? And if they do, is it not going to ruin him along the way? That being said, he's a guy who can play center field.
Yep. He's a legit prospect.
He can run, so he can pinch run for you.
Well, but is
and
this,
he can be a pinch hitter. Who, you know, we see if he hits a home fastball, he may hit for a homer.
Is he a 50 high, or is he more like a 55 extreme kind of guy?
I'd say at this point because
or a 50 extreme.
I would say 50 high.
Okay.
And the reason I would say 50 high, not 50 extreme, is because you can play center, he can steal bases, and he can hit for power, like. Poor man's Drew Stubbs.
Right, right.
But the thing about it is that you probably don't need to go extreme for that because the risk is probably not that much that he could be a fourth outfielder.
The other guy, the other prospect on this team who's, again, very young, but I got some good buzz doing Cubs top 30 on Marco Hernandez. I'm glad you included him. I mean...
He and Gioscar Amaya, same team, second
right.
Base on that team, both are available.
The thing is that Amaya is a little bit more ready offensively, but that team struggled very badly defensively just as a whole. They had a middle infield of Hernandez and Amaya, both very inconsistent, and Amaya might not be able to handle even second base. You had Jaimar Candelario at third base, who, you know, at times the game speeds up on him, doesn't have great first step quickness. You know, you get a very split on scouts who really think he could play third base or not. No one thinks he could be above average, but everyone thinks he could. You know, most people think he could be either fringe average or average at third base. Then you had Vogelbach at first, 20 defender. So he had a really bad, he had a very bad defensive
pitchers
infield.
Were not real happy.
They weren't. It affected several of them. But so you have Marco Hernandez there. He's the guy who can make the spectacular play and really struggle to make the routine play at times. To me, the shortstop who is most likely to get Rule 5 here is the Ryan Jackson type or the guy who's the Adam Everett. American shortstop who I kept on hearing that comparison during draft report cards. The guy who makes the routine play, has average range and all that kind of stuff.
I don't know if there, I'm trying to think if there
is. Those guys always get protected.
I was going to say, I don't know if there is one of those guys.
Those guys always get protected because they're reliable and managers go to bat for them. If they can hit at all, like a Nick Ahmed type, those guys, that's who, he's the next one. Nick Ahmed is the new template for that. Those guys always get protected because you need a shortstop. Look at Pete Cosma. You need a shortstop who can make plays.
And again,
he didn't even make plays.
The risk reward on that is so slanted towards reward in that even if he's going to be a utility infielder for you, if you can find a quality utility infielder who's going to make major league minimum for the next 2 years, win.
But Marco Hernandez is a plus arm. He's got good infield actions. There's a lot of...
And he's a better hitter. He's a better hitter than the normal template of the defensive whiz, Class A shortstop who gets drafted.
So the Cubs...
He's really more of, going way back, the number one pick of the Brewers in 2002? Cruz.
Luis Cruz.
Was it Luis?
It was a guy from the Mets organization.
Yeah, it was the Mets organization. It was Cruz. And... He was a little bit more physical.
Enrique Cruz.
He was more physical than Marco Hernandez.
So you say number one overall pick, you meant Rule 5 draft.
Yes.
So it took me a minute to think about that.
No, I was talking 2002, I was right. It was my first Rule 5 draft of Baseball America.
Wow. And that Rule 5.
Buddy Hernandez. I remember
That was a productive Rule 5. Let's just go down to 2002. A little memory lane Rule 5 draft. Enrique Cruz and Hector Luna, who stuck around for a while. Buddy Hernandez, now an area scout in Florida for the Braves, never returns my phone calls. Tony DeMaceo, take note. Will Ledesma, already discussed. Derek Thompson, feels like he was around forever. DJ Carrasco, he stuck around in the big leagues for a long time. Matt Roney, Victor Hall,
here it comes.
All-time number one personal cheese ball of all time, Marshall freaking McDougal, 6 home runs.
Houston Street's a little hurt by that.
I'm sorry, Houston, but get in line behind Marshall McDougal, all-time fave, all-time. Aquilino Lopez was in the big leagues for a while, and Javier Lopez, the left-hander, just signed another free agent contract.
Luis Ayala,
this was a great
Shane Victorino, Ronnie Paulino.
This was a great Rule 5.
I know Shane Victorino didn't.
Mike New at 16, I believe, is he's either a college coach or he might be the junior college coach at Sac City right now.
Gary Majewski?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Gary Majewski was in the big leagues for a while.
Jason Dubois.
Jason Dubois is now a hitting coach. I see he's a friend of Bill Mitchell's down in Arizona. So that 2002 draft, that's back when, you know, that was a one less year protection.
One less year makes a big difference because one less year means with the high school players, really what it meant is that you were getting them. They were just touching Double A a lot of times.
Yeah, that was a great Rule 5 draft in the history of Rule 5 drafts. Lower ceiling, but for depth. That
right.
was a great.
Usually,
Rule 5.
When you say a great Rule 5 draft, what you're talking about is 2000. Was it?
You know, 1998 with or 99 with Johan Santana. That's what you're talking about.
And you say, you know what? We don't care what the rest of it was.
Exactly.
It's Joaquin Soria.
See, and that was the Rule 5 where Victorino didn't even stick.
Right.
Because he got Rule 5 again in 2004, and I think that's the one where he stuck with the Phillies. In fact, because it was a second time getting Rule 5, they could, if he did make the team, they could stash him in AAA. They didn't have to keep him. I think if they didn't keep him, they didn't have to offer him back to his old team. He just became a free agent, and they signed him to a AAA contract. He was International League Player of the Year that year, and the rest has become history. So, and then Tony Blanco, the last pick of that year, almost won the Japan Triple Crown this year. So. Blanco. JJ, we have gone all over the board on the Rule 5 draft, but the Rule 5 does tend to be a tangent kind of draft.
I mean, but there is the greatest, that right there, you John is just in scrolling, come across
2006.
That is the best Rule 5 draft.
Yeah, Soria 2, Josh Hamilton 3.
Alfredo Simon.
And Jesus Flores. But yeah, they don't really...
But you don't have to after that. I mean,
correct.
You really don't. After that, it's all downhill.
That was the one being I forget where we were, where the winter meetings were that year. But I remember covering that with Chris Klein, and when Josh Hamilton got drafted, there was an audible gasp in the room. It was awesome. We'll never top that for just drama of a Rule 5 draft because when they said Cincinnati Reds, I mean not Cincinnati, it was the Chicago Cubs select Josh Hamilton. And everybody went, wow. It was really cool.
By the way, I mean, in hindsight, and I know, you know, it's a little harder to remember now because he had just had a really bad year, but man, they basically, the Reds acquired Josh Hamilton as free talent.
Yeah.
And then turned around a year later and traded him away for Edison Volquez. That doesn't look so good in hindsight.
It doesn't. It doesn't look so good in hindsight. JJ, is there any last words?
Well, this is not our last rule. Don't worry, fans. We will talk Rule 5 again on the podcast at some point.
Probably live from Orlando. Well, not live, but probably from Orlando when we're covering the winter meetings there. There was a third subject. We were going to talk about the Arizona Fall League, but it seems like we're out of time.
Yeah, it
might have to be a separate podcast.
That may be a separate podcast. We've already done an hour on this, pretty much. So yeah, we'll end with Rule 5 now. We'll still put a bow on AFL sometime soon. And we got NL Central coming in a separate podcast.
Subscribers have an Arizona Fall League top 20, which ended up being 32 guys because Bill Mitchell has mad AFL passion. He has AFL passion. You know, I guess the thing is that when you drop in, you love the AFL, but, you know, okay, you can come in, you can leave. When you're there and you live it every day for 6 weeks, like Bill, and you're not playing every day, like the players who already played 6 months and are all exhausted, I think Bill eats that stuff up more than anybody.
You said that. Remember, Bill's saying... Bill carries that passion from spring training.
And Bill has a real job too.
The AFL.
Bill has a real day job too, which is amazing. So.
And I mean, so you know, he carries that passion through as long a baseball season as you can have in the U.S.
And we love that passion, and that's why Bill's become a great contributor over the years here at Baseball America. So, speaking of great contributors, love the Rule 5 passion from you, JJ. I just love it. I love not having to be involved with it too much, and I really enjoyed. You're over the top, Rule 5 this week. It was awesome.
Hey, you know, it's fun to do. It's been fun, you know, kind of hearing from fans and, you know, good, you know, and a couple, you know, people in the game like, hey, yep. I'm enjoying this. So
it is, and it will continue. We got a couple more weeks of it. So we'll come back on the next podcast we'll see if we might want to wrap up the Fall League and also talk National League Central top prospects. So for JJ Cooper at JJ Coop 36, surprised that hasn't changed to at JJ Coop Rule 5. I'm at John Manuel, BA. We'll see you on the next Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.